All right. Okay, speaking of mayflies, in case you were, this is should be like a tourist attraction. People should come for Mayfly Festival. But you don't know when to come exactly. You know, it's chancy. But they show up on the radar, so when you see them coming, declare a festival. You know, Mayfly Festival. It's the thing. It's amazing. And we have Mr. Mayfly with us right here, Professor Emeritus Tom Claflin, right now to explain the miracle of the mayfly. A miracle it is. I don't think that's too strong a word. Let's see it. Now, you look familiar. We've met before? Or?
No, although I did see your show here 20 years ago.
Oh, yeah, I remember seeing it out there.
Yeah, did you have?
Yeah.
Actually, it was kind of fun. There were half a dozen of us or so, and the wife of one of the people was in labor. And so I filled out a card for her, and I said something to the effect that I'm such a fan that in spite of the fact I'm in labor, I'm going to stay for the whole show, and I signed her name. But you didn't see it, which is probably a good
just
thing.
As well,
we're still friends.
Yeah,
so.
Just as well. All right, so we're talking here about the Hexagenia bilineata.
Bilineata. Yeah.
I said that.
Mm-hmm.
Bilineata.
Mm-hmm.
Are there various types of mayflies? Are we looking at one specific?
Many, many species of mayflies in North America, but the two that we're talking about here are really both Hexagenia bilineata and Hexagenia limbata or limbata.
Limbata?
They're both.
That's the one that dances, right?
They're both, they do the dance under the bridges.
Yeah. Okay.
But they.
Well, which ones are in that you got to plow off the bridge? Which ones
are
those?
Both of them actually, but bilineata is one of the most common one here.
Yeah, are you still fascinated with these creatures? I mean, they're still being studied, right? They're kind of.
I'm still interested in river issues, and I did that almost all my professional life.
Yeah.
So, yes, I'm still interested in mayflies. They're very important. I feel like I should have to defend them here.
No. I think they should be a tourist attraction, I think.
Well, they are 2 days or 3 days out of the year, or a distraction.
Yeah.
But they, they're very important, and they're extremely important food items for several species of fish, bottom-feeding fishes.
Oh, the bottom-feeders.
Catfishes and whatnot, probably up to maybe 50% of their diet is mayfly, the larvae that live in the sediment. So, I mean, we see these critters 1 day a year, 2 days a year.
Yeah.
But they spend an entire year in the bottom of the river in the sediments as nymphs or larvae. And in that regard...
So that's going on right now. They're out there now.
Oh, yeah, just poised, waiting.
And what are they waiting for?
Well, the best predictor, I think, of the timing of the emergence, they call it the mayfly hatch, which is kind of a misnomer. It's really an emergence. The hatch happened when the eggs hatched into the larvae a year ago. But the emergence is when they emerge from the immature to the mature form.
Yeah.
And they're waiting, basically, the best predictor is the number of degree days. So it's a matter of temperature accumulation of heat and over a period of a year. And that's what makes them synchronous. I mean, all the eggs are laid on basically the same day because they all mate in 1 day. So it's imperative that if they're
not in an hour, right? They have a full day.
I think I'd give them a little more elbow room than that.
Yeah. Or whatever they have.
But they're only sexually mature for a day because the adults don't even feed. They don't even have functional mouths. They're not capable of
feeding. It's a blessing, really.
Probably so, they don't bite, But, the adult phase is strictly reproductive phase. And since they all hatch the same... It's very important, since you only have a day, that they overcome that and maximize their probability of finding a mate. And so that's why they're synchronous. But
they will mate with anything, right?
Well.
I mean, the male.
Speaking of a male here. So. I can't attest to that, but I.
Well, no, I don't mean you personally, but I mean, because I was reading, this paper is very interesting. This is the Fremling.
Fremling, yes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. paper. And I was reading it, and anything that moves in that swarm is fair game. If it's a female, so much the better, but it doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
You could throw a stone through there, and
it's
they'll
true.
Mate with
and,
it.
And well, they won't mate with it, but they may chase it. Temporarily. But that's how they operate. And the males swarm, usually in an evening, and they usually hover and swarm on a fix on some fixed object like a tree, and then
yeah.
the females fly up through the swarm, and they mate, and she deposits her eggs then in the water.
Does the female have a mouth?
No, no.
Okay, none of them do.
And she ultimately deposits her eggs. The eggs are, you know, spread to the...
Stop with you. I was just curious if she went on without him.
I'm just trying to ignore that because I want to see how to
go. No.
No.
I just meant that she have a full and wonderful life without him, like, go on, but she doesn't.
No.
She's
No, that's it. It's about a day and a half, and or at the most, and yeah. And then they mate, and if they mate, they deposit their eggs, and they start the new cycle.
Yeah. How many? I mean, do we have any numbers on this? As to
well, no.
How many males actually score in the average?
Oh, that.
In the average emergence.
A male can actually mate with more than one female, although.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, but yeah.
Now you tell me.
And I don't know, but a female will lay anywhere from 4 to maybe 7 or 8,000 eggs. So, once she's fertilized, so the numbers are, you know, it's a strategy where they produce very large numbers, and
yeah.
The survival rates are very low. But they are important food items for many fishes, and they've been used kind of for indicator organisms as well.
Yeah.
Now, years ago, when Minneapolis,
canary, like canary in the mine,
in a sense,
thing,
yeah. Minneapolis and St. Paul were flushing raw sewage for years, and they basically eliminated the mayflies from the upper reaches of the Mississippi River, including Lake Pepin, primarily because mayfly larvae, or the nymphs, have a rather stringent requirement for oxygen. And when sewage hits the water and deposits in the sediments, it simply extirpates them from the area. Yeah. So,
like they didn't have enough trouble, you know?
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
No oxygen.
Yeah, one in one day, you know, that
yeah.
kind of scenario. But
yeah.
But they have since come back now, since the state of Wisconsin sued Minneapolis and St. Paul successfully. And you can go into Lake Pepin now, which is a large body of water upstream from us, and find mayflies throughout. And so in that sense, they're kind of an indicator. But yeah.
Is there anywhere where they actually come out in May?
That's probably probably not. Well,
South
yes,
Carolina,
but
or
not these species. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And in fact, in the northern reaches of North America, you get Canadian waters. The
October flies, right?
Well, or the life cycle takes maybe 2 or up to 3 years. So, mm-hmm. And in southern reaches, it's usually one generation a year. So.
Yeah. Any fossil record of mayflies?
No, I don't think so. I don't think they're fossilized very well.
Yeah, they probably wouldn't.
But they certainly are obvious, and when they do emerge, they can be seen literally on weather radars, pick them up,
yeah.
the swarms. And of course, if you live in La Crosse, you've observed the collection of mayflies. They're photopositive, so they're attracted to lights, of course, and.
Right.
So they manage them by simply turning lights off on the bridges and whatnot. And,
which is great for traffic, too. Drive with your lights off through a swarm.
Yeah, I've seen some old photographs of years past where they've been piled up, you know, feet deep. But, you know, it's a small price to pay for a very important...
is that why the bridge now has holes in it? So they fall.
Well, I don't know. No, I don't think so. But I think it's solved some of the problem. I don't think that was the reason.
Yeah, yeah. And do they... I think I read in this where they tend to... assume the shape of a building or something. They will swarm in the shape of the building. Is that true?
Don't know. I haven't read that.
Okay. You got to read this paper. It's excellent paper. I got it from you.
That could be.
I
knew Cal very well, and Becky and I worked together on a number of projects.
Yeah,
But they do swarm. They do fix on objects, usually a tree or a building or something. And they'll...
What was the thinking behind the mayfly?
Well, you know,
I mean, here you go. You have one day.
Yeah, but it's
important.
You
got no mouth. You mate, and then the cycle starts. So
yeah,
they're just there as food, basically.
But that
for
may
other
be
species.
The most important day of their life because it stirs up.
Definitely
gene.
Would be.
Well, yeah.
That's hard to argue against.
No, but I agree.
Yes.
But it stirs up the gene pool. I mean, that new gene combinations and that perpetuates the species. So.
Yeah.
They're
evolving.
Well, everything. Yes. Everything's evolving, aren't we all?
So, what are they evolving towards? A mouth?
I don't
like
know
having
that.
A mouth and getting out of this cycle that's killing them.
Actually, if I knew the answer to those questions, I probably would.
That'd be cool, though, wouldn't
yeah.
it? If actually they were about, if suddenly we start to see mayflies with mouths and lives.
Yeah, I think the I don't think we'll see that change in our lifetime. But
yeah, yeah. So they're mainly, you know, you wonder about these things, though, don't you?
Yeah, well, you know, insects, if you had to look at the bizarre nature of life cycles in general, insects and, you know, mayflies and beetles, I mean, my stars, they display some of the most bizarre kinds of evolutionary characteristics that known to man. And
which beetle are you thinking of?
Well, there's a whole bunch of them, but I won't get into that, but... But I mean, there's.
Oh,
just
come on! Give me one beetle here.
The dung beetle. Dung beetles, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
are they evolving?
I presume they are.
Are they getting past the whole dung thing?
I think they're maybe more selective. I don't know.
Yeah.
Let's get off dung beetles here for a while.
No, they're interesting to me too, actually, because the Egyptians sort of thought they were very important.
The scarabs, yeah.
So. Whereas if you see very little mayfly worship.
Yeah, that's true. I never thought of that. I wonder if they have. I'm sure they have mayflies in the Nile River, but different species.
I think. Okay. And your career, however, is not based on the mayfly.
No,
itself.
And
you're more of a general river biology guy.
I was in the biology department at UW La Crosse here for 35 years.
35 years, and you started this. There's still something going on, a consortium or something.
Well, we created the River Studies Center back in 1970, and that's still going. And, we started the Mississippi River Research Consortium.
Yeah.
And those were exciting times in the 60s for river biologists because at that time, prior to the National Environmental Policy Act, a lot of the resources of the country were more aimed toward lakes, and people considered rivers as a convenience for transportation and to get rid of sewage and things. And in the 60s and early 70s, after the NEPA passed, we became very, very much more serious about the status of our rivers, and we realized how important they are in the general scheme of things. So it was fun to be a part of that back in the 60s and 70s.
Is the Mississippi healthier than it was 30, 40 years
ago? Yeah, the Mississippi is generally healthier than it was 40 years ago, but it's faced with lots of new problems now that are, you know, with invasive species and whatnot that are, and we keep creating problems for ourselves, and we never seem to learn from our mistakes when it comes to rivers. But
What's the invasive species of the year?
Well, the zebra mussel has been here for a while, you know. I mean, but now there are a number of fishes from the Asian continent that are coming on board and brought here for all the wrong reasons and have escaped. And
what's that called?
There's a silver carp there's a round goby now that is a small fish that's invasive. And the problem is it's going to disrupt the life cycles of many of our and it already has of many of our endemic species.
Are those like aquarium fish that get released or something?
Well, I think they were, fish in the wild that were just brought over by ballast water, but some were brought here initially on purpose to stock in southern ponds to control weeds, and I mean, that's crazy to do that. But they did it, and they got loose, and here they are, you know, and now they're trying to keep them out of Lake Michigan, and I don't know if that's going to be successful or not, but...
Do you have a prediction for the emergence this year? Are we looking at July 4th?
I don't know.
I want to plan a trip.
You know, it's interesting because it's conceivable this cool summer could delay them a week or maybe two. I don't know.
No.
I don't know that.
No, okay.
But I know we'll have some. They'll be here.
Okay. Thanks very much.
In large lumps.
Professor Emeritus Tom Claflin, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much. Thank you. Now, he's now with the Habitat for Humanity, by the way. That's his thing. Huh? Thank you, Tom. Professor, I mean. All right, then, there. Okay.